there, guys, and welcome to the April 15th edition of the NFL Sunday Supplement. With me today, we've got Chappers.
Hi, guys.
And Arnie.
Hey there, guys.
Of course, been a slow couple of weeks news-wise. It's that time of year, I suppose. So we'll go to the finale of Bounty Gate, as they've been calling it. Joe Vitt been named the interim head coach. Parcells decided to stay retired. I suppose it seemed the logical thing to do.
Yeah, assistant head coach. I didn't think he'd come out in the first place.
No.
And I don't think for any coach, why would you want to go to a place that's just been doing that sort of thing?
Well, it's not so much that. It's just, I think it may end up being a tough season in New Orleans because of the fallout from all this. And I think it would just be difficult to go into like a team just knowing it's for that 1 year. Guys aren't going to play as hard for you. You know, you don't know all the staff. It could go horribly, horribly wrong, I think. I think it had to be someone internal or someone who had experience with the sort of regime that's currently in place. So, really, to me, it was between Vitt and Spags the whole time. The only thing that sort of makes it questionable is, you know, guessing Spagnuolo is going to take the position for the first 6 weeks because Joe Vitt's also suspended because of the scandal. So, we'll see what happens there, but
To be honest, they've got Drew Brees who can hold up the offensive side for those short whiles. The leader he is, he led the private player workouts during the lockout this year, so
yeah, he knows the system as well as a quarterback can know any system.
Yeah.
So
if anyone's going to play hard for anyone, it'd be definitely Drew Brees.
Yeah,
assuming he actually gets a long term deal he wants, which I'm pretty sure he'll get now.
You'd think so, but they've got to get that deal done fairly soon, actually, because the suspension starts soon.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
But we'll see how things go. Not sure how much it really impacts their season now that we, you know, knowing it is Joe Vitt. He took over for the couple of games when Peyton was up in the booth, at least down on the sidelines anyway, so.
Oh, well, after his Tampa Bay injury, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a huge deal. I do think the Saints may struggle to some degree just because you don't have that guy there. And you know, I know what the NFL is like. I've seen many a lazy player. Every roster has them, and I think without that same authority figure, you know, some guys might slack. And as I've said before, I think they're going to get everyone's best game next year because of the what's gone on.
Oh yeah, there's no room for slacking now. They're going to have to come out hard because teams are going to be absolutely after them next year. Absolutely.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Yep, so moving on, obviously got the draft in a couple of weeks, so there's rumours abound about all kinds of things, you know, team visits, teams giving up random little bits of information, whether they're just posturing to try and, you know, deny interest in a player they really want, who really knows. But the one that's probably I found most interesting is, it seems that apparently the Vikings are not sold on Matt Khalil.
Smokescreen. I see it's got to be.
I don't know why they would not be interested. They need him there, really.
Well, what I've heard is they're more impressed with Blackmon and Claiborne. Now, Claiborne, I can kind of get. He may be as good, if not better, a prospect. But it's very much down to your own opinion. Blackmon is not as good a prospect. And he's a huge need. And you'd argue there's more positional value there as well, so you know, like everyone's got him slotted there because it's such common sense that that should be the pick. So, I agree. I think it's just a smokescreen.
Who do you reckon would pick Khalil up instead?
I think the Buccaneers would have to if he fell to five because I couldn't see the Browns taking him, to be honest.
No, they've got Joe Thomas that one side.
Joe Thomas on the left. He's going to be there for a long, long time and he's on a massive deal.
Yeah.
So, I think Tampa could, because Donald Penn's getting up there in age, and they desperately need to replace Trueblood because he's a liability.
What, Starkiller was right tackle?
You'd have to start him at right tackle, yeah. I mean, I would rather put a rookie on the right side anyway, just because it's a little easier to adjust. You don't have that same level of responsibility and pass protection, which is, of course, the thing you're more concerned with. And then, you know, you can just groom him for a couple of years, eventually him and Penn can possibly switch over when Penn starts to sort of slide toward the end of his career. Yeah. But I just don't see it happening. I agree. I can only see it as a smokescreen or they're trying to drum up trade interest. And I know they would be happy to trade down from everything I've heard. And I can believe that because, you know, the Vikings are a long way from any sort of realistic contention, I feel. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, but out of interest, who would go up and who for?
Well, that's the difficult thing. I mean, I suppose if the Vikings are willing to trade the pick, there could be a demand for Khalil because it's one of the better tackle prospects we've had in a while. And there are a lot of teams that need tackles. A lot of teams. So it's a tough one. Really don't know, because it's one of those, you know, it costs so much to trade up to those kind of slots. It would likely have to be someone in that sort of 16 to 4 range that would, you know, have the ammunition to do so, because it's not something I could see the Patriots doing. They got Nate Solder last year. The Bengals have a decent O-line as is. A lot of money tied up in Andre Smith, and they got Andrew Whitworth. So really, really difficult to sort of put a specific team in there. But I mean, it is something that a lot of teams, it would be well worth them considering. It's just how much do you give up? Because, you know, when it's a quarterback, if you really believe in that quarterback, it can always be justified. Like, you look at the Redskins scenario, how much they've given up. A lot of people are saying, you know, it's perfectly justified because you do need to have that quarterback. With a left tackle, you know, while you do need one, it's not like with quarterback you need the guy. At left tackle, you can get by with someone who's adequate. Obviously, you'd rather have the elite guy, but it's just not always a possibility. So, I don't know. What's your opinion on this sort of thing? I'm
just not sure, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, fair enough. But I just the main thing is to me, like, I cannot really see Blackmon as a better prospect or Claiborne. Claiborne, as I said earlier, you can make an argument for, but nah, it doesn't make any sense to me that they'd get rid of it. It's left tackle is such a huge need. They've got that young quarterback. Get him the guy to protect him.
Well, yeah, they invested in Ponder last year, so, you know, have someone grow with him.
Exactly.
Build up the trust and the relationship. It's the most second important part of the team, that left tackle.
Yeah.
Is the insurance.
You reached last year for Ponder. This year, go for the safe pick. You know, you don't need to jeopardise any sort of positions that you're in.
Do you think owners are feeling more pressure to actually pick up sexy picks, though, now? Like, with the first two, with, like, Luck and RG3, do you think teams are now thinking, oh, we really need to get the sexy ones? Like the Browns. So they're under a massive pressure to take Justin Blackmon or Trent Richardson, but I'd say more on Blackmon.
Well, I think some of the teams that are having, you know, issues selling tickets, perhaps, then in their case, maybe, because, you know, you need to draw those fans out. A franchise like Washington's not realistically going to have blackout problems. Even in Cleveland, actually, they've got a pretty loyal fan base there. Mm-hmm. I think with Cleveland, when you say, you know, the sexy picks, is those are the positions that they most desperately need, are all the skill positions. You know, the O-line, it's not great, but you've got Alex Mack and Joe Thomas, who are two of the better players, better young players on the offensive line in the league. The defense, rock solid last year, and frankly, you know, the only prospect you can consider them take, you know, considered worth taking at that spot is Claiborne, but they've already got Joe Hayden, who's been superb.
Well, so, yeah, he's one of those quiet guys who's built himself up, and he looks like he could be elite in the future, hopefully.
I'd say
he's playing great enough now.
He played at an elite level last year, I thought, so.
Not particularly quick, but he seems to.
Not a fast guy, but you don't need to be. I've always said, you know, speed is somewhat overrated.
That was definitely something when he was coming out of college, especially in the combine.
That was the reason he fell, because on tape, you know, there was no denying that he was a quality player. Tackled well, solid corner in both man, solid man corner. Don't think you really saw him in zone too much in that Florida scheme. So you knew what you were getting, and, you know, it proved to be a good pick. Yeah, they picked him high, a lot higher than people thought they should have because of the slow 40, but they've been proved right on him, so it's just one of those things. As I said, 40 times always overrated. You know, if it was down to who has the fastest team, the Raiders would win the Super Bowl every year.
Oh yeah,
so
very true. Or even the Eagles in some cases.
Yeah, I think what was perhaps, though, moving on from that, been interesting is seeing sort of some of the players that have fell. stock-wise in the draft this year, and some of the reasons for it.
There has been a few.
I have, because the two main ones for me, well, actually, I'll go with three. You've got Vontaze Burfict, who has fell like as much as I've seen a player do so in a very small space of time. He's been spotted around as a possible late first rounder, second round guy. Now, you know, we're talking fourth to seventh, possibly even undrafted. Ran a horrible 40 time at the combine, apparently blamed all of his issues on his coaches or something, I think it was. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
During the interview process. As well as that, you know, he had character flags before any of this. So, yeah, he has hurt himself about as much as any prospect I've ever seen. So there's him, then you've got
Quinton Coble's just dropped, and Mayock's come out really hard on him.
Yeah, I mean, Mayock said he wouldn't even draft him. He's put him 50th on his big board, and we're talking about a guy who before this college season, you know, they were talking about as a top 10 pick. I mean, they're still talking about as a top 10 pick based on potential, but the flags are clearly huge ones. And you know, he said he gave like a C, he'd give himself a C for his effort last year or something. He said, I think it was to Charlie Cassidy on NFL Network. Like, not sure why you'd even say that.
It's nice to be honest sometimes, but there's times. Yeah, I think he should have. It's nothing wrong with being honest, but he should have really tried. He should have spoke a little bit afterwards as well.
Yeah, he probably should come out and try and verify that statement, I feel, because it certainly doesn't look good on him. And then the other player is Alshon Jeffery, who again, before last season, there was set, you know, it was going to be between him and Blackmon to see who was going to be the number one receiver taken off the board. And now, you know, we're asking questions as to whether he's even going to be the first receiver taken in the second round. And again, character concerns. Apparently, he interviewed really badly, and he didn't have a great season, but he was on a poor team. So we'll have to see what happens. I mean, Jeffery is the one that's most intriguing to me because he's got the whole skill set, size and speed wise, that you'd be looking for. He really looks the part of an elite receiver at times. So
he's just got that. Yeah, he's a bit of a loose cannon.
Well, most receivers are. Look at.
Joe, I find interesting. Last year, you had a lot of big name drop offs, but mainly because of injuries. You had Melvin Ingram being one of them.
Yeah.
Another big one was Bowers.
Oh, last year, last year Bowers.
Way last year.
Last year Bowers was obviously it.
Yeah.
The major one.
This year, it's mainly because of attitude problems.
Yeah. Well,
bad tape.
I think teams have learned, and bad tape is frankly the biggest red flag I think a player can have. I mean, if. It's similar with like Poe, while his stock flew up briefly, I think, you know, things have started to realign and people have realised, you know. You look at a tape and he flashes the odd bit of ability, but he's not a football player at this moment in time. He's an athlete playing the game, but he's not a refined football player. So obviously he could still be dominant, because you look at like Jason Pierre-Paul was exactly in this exact same situation.
Yeah.
But we've got so many examples throughout the league. Of course, I'd say more examples of players failing in this scenario than actually succeeding. So it's just one of those things. A bit of guesswork, obviously, and I guess some real good scouting. Because I think it's harder than ever these days. Like, I was figuring, you know, maybe a team going into the draft back in the 70s, 80s, there probably wasn't, you know, well, I say probably wasn't, there wasn't the media coverage, it wasn't the known entity that it is now. Think about it these days, all these players are going to the combine, they've got a good idea what questions they're going to be asked, their agents have prepped them, you know, they're media savvy now, they for the most part know what they're doing. So I think it makes it a lot harder for the scouts, coaches to, you know, get the information that they necessarily need. I think that's why, if you look at like the Patriots, actually, they've got to give him credit for the fact they've done a very good job throughout Belichick's tenure there of taking football guys. You cannot argue with the fact that there are guys on that roster like your Gronkowski's, your Jared Mayo's, who are just football junkies, and you know he'll always take those guys over the athletes.
Also with that, it seems to be just him really assessing these players and interviewing them. Do you think with other franchises, obviously they have more than one person doing it, do you think that also it doesn't exactly, even though it's more more eyes, different opinions, but sometimes that can clash and really
throw
you off. Yeah,
if I was, you know, GM or something, I'd want every single, you know, coach that's relevant to that player's position in there. The head coach and obviously the coordinator for the relevant side of the ball, possibly even both, just because, you know, I'd want as many opinions as I could possibly get. But I mean, it's difficult because, you know, you've always got guys pushing. I suppose if you get too many guys in there, there's probably an agenda, like, you know, the DB coach is going to go, yeah, I want that first round cornerback, and maybe not give the most honest answer, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I guess the best thing to do is probably maybe head coach and GM, in terms of guaranteeing that, you know, these are the two guys who are in the most jeopardy at all times and have the most riding on the pick.
Yeah, cause this is how I feel with Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins, because we've got the old Texas A&M coach in Sherman with us now, and I can't help but feel he's a real mass. He's the biggest influence on Philbin going into this one. I know Jeff Ireland doesn't buckle into anyone else's pressure, but if Philbin starts speaking out as well.
Oh, one of the things I've heard is that the Dolphins have no interest whatsoever in trading up. They're going to sit pat and see what happens, possibly consider trading down. Now, that says to me, first off, you know, Tannehill's stock is only so high because of, you know, the need for quarterbacks. You look at the tape, you're only a one-year starter at the quarterback position. You know, there's a reason people were talking about him as a, you know, late first, early second guy when the season initially ended. And we saw this last year when, you know, when Christian Ponder did get drafted 12th overall, and we saw possibly even Jake Locker, although I suppose the argument you can make with Locker is he's got all the physical tools. I don't see anything that says to me that Tannehill is necessarily an elite quarterback. I mean, I don't really see a huge amount from his tape that says he's a massive upgrade over what they've already got in Matt Moore. So I figure, you know, he's going to have to sit for a year anyway. I don't understand why, as a franchise, you'd want to necessarily take that chance, because if you pick him, it has to work out, or that's, you know, the current regime is out. I mean, they're under a lot of pressure now anyway.
Yeah.
Well, Ireland is, obviously. Head coach, not so much. But, you know, do you really want to ride with a guy that you know is a reach? And ultimately, they know he is. But yeah, and to your point about who's it pushing for him? The offense, OC.
Sherman.
Yeah, Sherman. That's a tough one, because obviously it's rather like, you know, the bone is with Claiborne having the same, now that we got the DB coach from LSU. Well, he, in a way, is an advantage in that you have more information. It's just, is it the right information? You know, does he just think more of him because of the fact he's worked with him, he knows what he's getting? I don't know.
It's like you've got an emotional attachment and you've got a positional attachment as well. You want to succeed on your front, so you want the better players to help yourself look that much better. So,
yeah, I've never been a huge fan of teams sort of drafting specifically just because there's a huge need at a position. I'm a firm believer, you know, you look at the best players that are available, and then you go for, you know, if there's a bunch of players of a similar rating, then you go for the one that fits the position and need. So in Miami's case, I suppose at that point you'd be looking at possibly Michael Floyd if you've got him rated highly on the board.
Receiver and pass rush is the two that
Michael Floyd, Melvin Ingram if he's there, possibly even a right tackle. And
I think we're either going to use Lyndon Murther or John Jerry.
Do you feel great about either of those?
I feel good about
John
Jerry. I like the look of John Jerry. Murther, not so
much.
Yeah,
you like looking because he's huge.
No, it's not. It's not just that. I've seen a few of his games. He played a whole game against the Jets. Done, not too bad actually. Considering they haven't got any pass rush, granted. But
true.
Not too bad. I think he's got potential. I'd like to see him at least give, at least a couple of games, maybe a season. If not, put Vernon Carey back on that right hand side, and then slot in Jerry as a guard.
Fair enough.
Either way, guard or tackle would suit him.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot of needs there in Miami, I suppose.
Yeah, new fans as well. That's
Well, they've got plenty of fans. It's just they're all disillusioned and unhappy.
Fans that don't up and decide to go follow the Jets teams that I've seen on certain forums. God damn you all.
That's not just Dolphins fans. You get that with everyone.
Yeah,
good old fair weather fans. Yeah, you can tell we're not. Unfortunately, none of us are currently following the most successful of teams.
No.
It's been a rough few years.
You know, the most successful team that we follow is the Tennessee Titans.
Hey, no, yeah. Most successful last year.
Last year, as well, yeah.
Well, technically, you know, you were the best losers last year.
Yeah, we were.
In that sense.
Team at 9-7.
Yeah. So, is there anything you guys been reading that's caught your attention?
No, a lot of the stuff I've been reading this week is sort of the reader of the drafts.
Oh, yeah.
The last few years. Seeing a few sort of interesting ones, but...
To me, they're a fairly... I mean, they're interesting to look at, but it's a fairly pointless exercise in a lot of ways. It's like, well, yes, in hindsight, it is very easy. The one thing, actually, you know, I've been pushing for someone to trade for Mike Wallace because, I mean, come on, I shouldn't have to explain this.
Yeah.
Word is there are apparently some teams considering it. He's not happy with his situation. He's apparently holding out from all the team workouts and he's going to continue to do so. Don't know how much truth there is to that, but I mean, what sort of teams do you think would be interested?
The Bengals just they scream out to me. With their two picks they've got, they could just give up one of them and they've got an awesome receiver there and just put aside with AJ Green.
I think ultimately all of the three teams within that division make sense. All three of them could use him, and all three of them have a pick in the sort in the 20s to, you know, in the 20s.
I think
so.
The Browns make more sense. They draft
from a Richardson. From an absolute need perspective. Yeah,
take Richardson, go out there, get Wallace.
Exactly.
Give Colt McCoy a bit of a chance.
Exactly. That way, you know, Holmgren's obviously been criticised a lot for not giving Colt McCoy the support that he needs. Well, if he goes and gets Richardson and gets Mike Wallace, there you go. There's that support. So then it's just down to Colt McCoy to go out and do his thing.
Yeah.
I'm still a bit of a believer in Colt McCoy. I'm not sure he's ever going to be a world beater, but I think he's probably better than anything you're likely going to be able to get at this point. I mean, especially, you know, Tannehill's a reach for you guys at four.
I certainly, outside of Griffin and Luck, there's no one in this draft I see as a considerable upgrade, for the Browns or the Dolphins, really.
Well, there's a few like later round guys that I kind of, you know, I quite like. Like, Brett Osweiler is interesting to me.
Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, that's the one. Brett.
Yeah,
Brock.
Oh, the absolute giant playing quarterback.
Yeah.
I've seen one of his tapes. The guy's got a good zip. Otherwise, I don't know. There's a reason he's second round behind the likes of Tannehill and Brandon.
Well, as well as that, one of the reasons is because of his size, teams are worried about his footwork and the fact that he might actually be too big to play the position functionally, which is something I hadn't heard about the quarterback position until this season. So it'd be an interesting one. And the Arizona State quarterback, he's interesting. But there are guys beyond the first round. Look at what Andy Dalton did last year. You don't have to take a guy in the first round, especially when, you know, he's probably not got a first round grade, or, well, may have a first round grade, but he's not going to have a top 10 grade unless you really, really, really love your Tannehill. So we'll see what happens, but, you know, he's certainly the guy benefiting the most this year from the lack of quarterbacks coming out. Could have been a really interesting draft had
Barkley and Jones came out.
Then, well, it'd have been shocking then if Washington had traded up all that. The Rams, the ones who probably benefited the most from those guys going back to school.
Yeah, where would you put RG3 if Jones and Barkley would have come out this year?
I'd figure actually it. People would be currently discussing, you know, Barkley and RG3 is the number two. Luck would still be considered number one. I think he still is for the most part, bar the odd, you know, contrarian. But I think there would be genuine discussion between those two guys. And I think it would be fair discussion. Barkley, though, I mean, with him going back for a third year, he's probably, you know, cemented himself as the number one pick. For next year,
as long as
unless something goes very wrong. Well, I think he's in a position very similar to that which Andrew Luck was in this year, where, you know, his position is solidified, but if he shows statistical improvement and does a bit more in terms of, you know, scheme on the line, because they run a fairly pro-style scheme in USC as well. So if he can, you know, start doing a bit more of that stuff, then he becomes a can't-miss prospect in a similar way that Luck is, because, you'd have had your 3 years starting, 3 years of steady, constant improvement in a pro-style scheme. You know, those guys very rarely come along. He'd be, you know, surefire number one pick. And I'm sure there'll be some uber athlete, unknown quarterback, because there has been a few years who kind of just, you know, puts up ridiculous numbers next year. We'll probably be having the exact same discussion this time next year about a couple of guys. Landry Jones, I think he's a good player, but I think he's one of them guys who's so highly touted because of his physical skill set. In the same way that, like, you look at the tape, he's good some games, he will force passes, and I don't see that changing, because it's one of those things, you know, you can see a player's mentality on tape, and I think it's something that's very difficult to change. If a guy will force the odd pass because, you know, he believes he can get it in there, and obviously it's more of a problem when you have these guys with howitzers that can actually, you know, occasionally force those passes in, then, you know, it's hard to unteach that sort of thing, because, you know, it's just the way the guy plays. Brett Favre never learned otherwise. I know a lot of guys that haven't learned otherwise.
Well, those 20 interceptions weren't going to throw themselves. Someone had to come in and do it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Brett Favre.
That's pretty much, that is probably his motto. Wakes up every day to that. So
yeah, someone's got to throw those
goes
interceptions.
Goes out in his back garden and throwing picks. It's an empty league without Favre. I do kind of feel like he was the Ray Lewis of offense, like the iconic guy that was a little bit crazy.
Yeah, just having there. I was disappointed he genuinely didn't make a shot last year.
Another comeback.
I'd have loved to have seen him, not with Miami, obviously, but it'd been nice.
Yeah, it'd been nice to see him on a divisional rival. That's why everyone's dreaming of Favre coming out of retirement to do that.
The Packers don't have a backup anymore since Flynn's gone.
That would be. No, that's ESPN's wet dream right there. Can you imagine how many stories there would be? Oh my goodness. I don't think we'd ever hear the end of it.
Nope.
Ugh.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, there'd be reporters, you know, camped outside Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre's house. It would be horrible. Absolutely horrible. We thought Peyton Manning, the Manning saga was bad from that perspective. We'd have nothing on this. I said, I don't know if this is news at all, but apparently people have been really impressed with Peyton Manning in Denver. I don't know why that's news, because of course they're impressed. Last year they were looking at Tim Tebow and Kyle Orton throwing the ball. Of course they were going to be impressed. All he had to do was, you know, come in and be an above average NFL passer, and they were going
to
be impressed.
He didn't even need to do that. He just needs to come in and just say, "Hello, I'm way impressed in that now."
Yeah, I'm Peyton Manning.
Yeah,
it's because no one's been talking about Denver or Manning for the past week because
they feel like they're missing out on some good airtime.
And plus, also Tim Tebow's still getting more coverage than Manning in Denver.
I don't care. I really don't.
I think it's unbelievable when we live in a time where a guy who you know is going to start as a backup to Mark Sanchez is getting more media coverage than Peyton Manning going to the Broncos.
Well, that's the thing. It's so bad. Tebow. I am a bit of a Tebow supporter in a lot of ways.
I am because of the things he does.
Even I'm sick of it now.
Yeah, it is boring.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great story last year to follow. That was great fun. I mean, I almost converted to Christianity, which was a terrifying prospect in some ways. But, you know, yeah, he's good for the game. But these are just all non-stories. It's like, yeah, we'll wait till the season happens. Because it's going to happen. You know, Sanchez will have at least one or two games early in the season where he doesn't look remotely impressive. And, you know, we're going to have to hear all this. Can we just save it till the season, till we hear all this stuff? Yeah. I don't want to hear it now. None of it's news. It's Tim Tebow, blah, 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 blah. It's same thing every single time. I'm a little bit sick of it personally, but what can you do? One thing I did find quite interesting, actually, random little tidbit about the draft, was apparently teams do look at mock drafts, like a couple of weeks before the draft, sort of get an idea what's going on around them, what the media thinks, you know, certain teams need, what they're likely to do.
Do you think it influences them? Do you think it influences?
Don't think it influences their own decisions in terms of who they're going to pick. Now, I'd suggest what it may influence most is if a team feels like it's going to have to trade. But I figure they'd probably have a pretty good idea of that anyway. But, you know, toward the last couple of weeks, mock drafts do become fairly accurate because, you know, a lot of the picks do, you know, become a little telegraphed from, you know, through maybe 1 through 16. Then a couple of trades happen and it's all blown out of the water. But, yeah, you know, the first ones, you know, they're always fairly accurate, and it's not too hard to get an idea as to, you know, what teams should be doing. I mean, I remember reading the article and, you know, it was saying, yeah, team visits, it's not information provided to teams from the NFL. So the only way they find out is by just hustling. You know, have to make phone calls to guys' agents so they actually know who's visiting what team and when.
Yeah,
I thought that was quite an interesting little concept. But, it is quite interesting. I assumed they'd reuse them because it's a fairly valuable tool. Whilst obviously there are a lot of mock drafts that are pure garbage, and perhaps mine could be considered so last week. Although, because ours has gone up late, right, I'm just going to put this out there. Right, saw Fletcher Cox has been mocked to 6 to St. Louis. I haven't heard it from anyone else. I did it first. I said it last week. It's just, you know, the mock draft's only going up on Sunday, so.
No, in fairness, he did. Yeah, he actually did come up with the idea.
I'm not entirely certain it's going to happen, but I can certainly see it happening just because I know what Jeff Fisher's like. I know he likes his DTs. He loves his DTs. Not as much as Andy Reid. That man loves DTs, but yeah, it'll be an interesting one. I think Fletcher Cox is, as well as that, I've been watching some of his highlight tapes, and yeah, I see a really good player there. And the main thing I see is that sort of bit of scheme versatility, because you're seeing more teams, you know, using those four-three teams using three down linemen in, you know, some scenarios. And I think he's the sort of guy that you can put in that situation, because I think he could play 3-4 end. I think he gives you a lot of options. I think he's going to be a good player. Dan, I like his style. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Oh, nice.
Hard to really think of any more news, so what I figure we'd do, let's go with, you know, what we want our teams possibly to do in the draft. So, you know, what would you be looking at, Chavez, for your Miami Dolphins?
From a personal perspective, wide receiver,
yeah,
and probably pass rush, but the biggest need is probably wide receiver, because at the minute we've got a core of Hartline, Bess, Gates to throw at.
You've got
top three,
that's speed and a slot guy.
Speed and what I consider two slot guys.
Well, no, Bess does a bit more than just play the slot. I think he
does, but I'd argue that's his best. That is where he's best.
Well,
as the slot guy,
you'd figure so. I think it's just very difficult to imagine a guy of that size being particularly dominant on the outside, because he doesn't really have the speed.
We've tried him there before and it just doesn't work.
I think he's made more plays out than a lot of people give him credit for. But yeah, I still
makes
him
more
as a slot receiver.
But the thing is, though, you can't keep concentrating on him. He can't be that guy that you go to all the damn time.
He drops too much. And if there's one thing that I cannot stand in a wide receiver, it's one who can't catch consistently.
Like Brandon.
Yes, precisely. Yeah. Hence, I obviously mentioned him and his cases of the drops he's many a time. Seems to be something just about your receivers, to be honest, the last couple of years in Miami. But what sort of, I mean, so round one, ideally, what you want, the pass rusher in round one, you'd figure.
I figure, because it's a deeper draft with terms of wide receivers. There are a lot better quality wide outs there than there are pass rushers, so pass rush would probably be something we'd have to target high. But then again, I don't know how we could pass up on someone like Floyd or Blackman, even if some by miracle he's there.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like a guy like Floyd, the closest you have is, you know, the aforementioned Alshon Jeffrey, but that's a massive risk.
Yeah, that's, we don't need another.
And you already had a head case.
We've already kicked one out. We don't need another. I think Philbin's made that one absolutely clear. So that, I don't think he'll take Copels on that basis.
Oh,
I think Melvin Ingram would be gone. I think the Jaguars might possibly take him.
Hmm.
I did originally say they'd take an O-liner, but I think the
Jags are a real tough one because you look at the sort of division they're in. There's a part of me that wants to just say, just go D, get that pass rusher. Your D's close to elite as is, and just try and get that over the hump, and just, you know, hope something happens on offense. But you know, the reason I don't like teams taking receivers high is if you look at like in the league. Sort of the top guys. Now, obviously, you've got the physical freaks who generally have gone in the first round. So you've got, you know, those top three guys: Andre Johnson, Fitzy, Megatron. Megatron went 2. Both Andre Johnson and Fitzgerald went number 3. So, and of course, they did. You could see it in college. They were as dominant in college as they are now. Mm. Calvin Johnson, perhaps not so much until his final year. But you know, you knew the ability he had, and people had seen, you know, the last time people had seen someone like Calvin Johnson come into the league, it was Randy Moss, and people saw what happened there. So with Calvin Johnson, you know, they got a sane Randy Moss, which is, yeah, doesn't really get much better than that. But if you look at like other guys, you think T.O. was an elite receiver. He didn't go very high. Obviously, he was a head case. Brandon Marshall, head case, but he didn't go very high. Chad Johnson, or Ocho Cinco as he's now known, he was an elite player once upon a time.
Once.
And he went in the second, or he went in either the second or third. I'm pretty sure it was the second. You know, there's a lot of guys in the league. DeSean Jackson went in the second. Mike Wallace went in the third. Antonio Brown went in the fourth, I believe.
Yeah.
You can get receivers almost anywhere because, you know, the way the receiver position is played in college, this is just my theory, is so different to the NFL that it's really hard to, you know, scout them and know who's going to get it. It's not like a lineman. All a lineman is doing, you know, obviously, again, blocking schemes, very different, but you can judge from technique perspective whether they can block. You can judge, you know, their size and speed a lot easier, and perhaps speed's less relevant in the case of an O-lineman. You know, you get a much better idea of that player's level, and you can see that in the way, you know, tackles, for the most part, fairly consistent in the way they pan out. They're considered a fairly safe pick, whereas receivers are not. So that's why I'm just not a fan of taking them high up. I think you just take a flyer on someone that you like in the later round.
I'll tell you one that I would take a flyer on in much, much later rounds. It's the Hurricanes' Tommy Streeter. I've got a real soft spot for that.
I'm
though.
Not
he's
sure
just,
he's going to
last
he's that.
He's very, very raw. Very raw.
Incredibly.
But I'd like to give him a shot. I just would.
Well, he's one of them guys.
He's got
from
a great
size,
yeah,
speed.
Great physical size, and he's got the speed. It's just working his hands just a little bit, and he's route running.
Yeah, if he can, you know, learn to play receiver, he'll be really good. I figured he's probably going to go in, I think, the third or fourth, just because of his physical skill set.
Yeah, I've seen teams. I've seen him been linked with the teams like the Ravens. I've seen was one.
Yeah,
before,
I mean,
one mock, but
unfortunately, you know, for a team like Miami, ideally, he's the sort of guy you'd want him to go to a team that's already got some established guys that he can just develop behind them.
Yeah,
and rather than just plugging him in straight away, because you know sometimes that does destroy a player's career more than it can help him.
Nah, it's late round anyway. The guy's very raw, so no massive risk.
Yeah,
try
some. Yeah, although first round you'd be thinking pass rush. The second round, there's gonna be some good receivers there. Guy like Mohamed Sanu from Rutgers, heard a lot about him lately. I think it's just because when you watch him play, it's like. Fairly tough guy, makes difficult catches. Yeah, look, he looks a good player. The worry with him is he's not that fast, not all that quick and sudden. So,
I've got a feeling we might actually be going with the two tight end scheme as well, because utilize Anthony Fasano and probably use Charles Clay.
Yeah,
in that tight end position, what we actually drafted him for, not as a fullback. I don't like him at fullback. I don't think he's got the physical build for it.
Fair enough. Right, so. Yes, we'd be thinking, what? So
pass
we'll
rush
do a summary.
First. Pass rush first.
DN slash backer first.
Second wide receiver,
round.
Second to third. The rest of the positions, stuff like more corner depth, possibly safeties as well.
Possibly take a flyer on a right tackle to develop later on.
Yeah,
try and get
more
talent.
Yeah, nice right tackle as well. Yeah. I don't know. It'd be interesting. See what we can do.
Fair enough. So, I'll move on to the Bucks. Well, so much need. I mean, secondary. In fact, the whole back seven. They need backers. They need safeties. They need corners. They need, you know, and notice plural of all of them. They don't just need one of those positions. The offense is looking, on paper, fairly sound right now. As much as I want True Blood replaced, unfortunately, it's probably not. It, in fact, it's definitely not top priority. You probably figure the rest of the O-line can make up for his deficiencies. Could do have another tight end. I think you can hope Luke Stocker will develop from last year, but you never know. Winslow's getting up there. I think getting another guy, preferably a blocking type fella, especially with, you know, what all the stuff Shiano said about the team wanting to be a power football team, which I've been hearing since Raheem, so I'm a little dubious about it. Need a running back, whether it's a starter or a guy to spell Blunt and give us the stuff that he doesn't currently offer, and possibly another receiver, just because I don't really, with how Mike Williams' history and how he played last year, I don't like the idea of him being remotely comfortable. I want him challenged.
Yeah,
I want him
definitely.
Challenged heavily. Aurelius Ben just needs to improve. Yeah, you can never have too many receivers, I figure. And
there's a lot of things you need.
A lot. They need to go corner early first. Ideally Claiborne if he's there, which he should well be, unless the Vikings really are serious. And after that, I think safety. I don't know if there's a safety I'd really consider in the second. Maybe go for a running back in the second, and then just fill up the remaining spots. You know, a linebacker, yeah, another linebacker, yeah, safety. You know, and just work their way down. But it's got to be defensive based. It could do have another tackle for depth as well.
Yeah,
possibly another D end. You know, the list is endless.
Oh yeah.
At least we've got good special teams.
That's true.
Yeah. So, you want to move on with Tennessee?
Yeah. Unlike your teams, we don't have as many gaping holes. There's only a few.
I look at the Titans, I see
the one
pass
that screams
rush
out
and
is pass
possibly
rush.
Another receiver. And
yeah,
the two
a lot
that
of
jump
people
out.
Are saying we could
oh,
pick up.
Oh, safeties. You guys need safeties.
Yes, we do, actually. But a lot of people have been saying we could pick up a cornerback in the second. But I'm not sure. Because of the whole Asante thing, I don't know if that's going through. I don't know what's going on with
I don't
that.
Think anyone's going to find out till draft day.
Yeah, but if we get Asante, then no, we don't need any more cornerbacks because we've just filled the hole that we had by losing Finnegan. I think first round we have to go with a pass rush, whether it be linebacker or whether it be defensive end. I know we've just drafted.
I think it would be a D lineman. If you're looking defensively, I'd be thinking a D
second
lineman,
round,
possibly a corner.
Yeah, second round, I'm looking at the outside linebacker on the weak side with Will Witherspoon.
Yeah, get a successor there, set yourself up at the linebacker position for the future. I'd be thinking maybe in the second you might take a flyer on a guard or a centre.
We could do with a centre. We could do with a centre.
I mean, they're huge needs. I mean, you did get Hutchinson, but, you know, he's... old. He's old. He's going to need to be replaced.
Well.
Yeah, another guy to rotate in. Because Derek Marks has really not panned out.
No, he hasn't. And either is Sean Smith.
Yeah, they bought him in to be like the big body at tackle, and he really wasn't all that good at run stuffing. So.
No, he really wasn't. So, I mean, Klug's too small to fill that position. So.
Yeah, Klug found his role last year. He's going to stick to that. You never know. Sometimes those undersized guys manage to worm their way in just because they end up, you know, they're a better player than you'd think. Like Jay Ratliff managed it. And he's not an undersized guy, but he's undersized for the position he plays, and he managed to work his way in. Although I suppose he's used in a very different way to most nose tackles.
Realistically, for Tennessee, I would like a defensive end in first round, or even a DT, and then second round receiver. Like to go along with Kenny Britt, because there's always the risk of Kenny Britt getting injured. I've said this many a times. He's one night out from getting another suspension.
Yeah, so many red flags there.
So we need help alongside Washington as well.
Washington, who again is old, is getting up there in age as well.
Yeah,
so
I mean, Lavelle Hawkins,
Damian Williams.
We need someone that's an upgrade on them. I mean, they still have room to improve, I suppose. they haven't really shown much time.
Yeah, the thing is, I always figure teams cannot assume development of players.
You just can't. Need to go
if,
out
if
and
the
get
piece
it.
Isn't there, yeah. Go get it. If a guy develops, great.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're our main needs, really.
Fair. But I think this is a pretty good thing to discuss, actually. We'll probably move on, do a bit of looking into perhaps some other teams, maybe do it next week. Get, like, maybe try and cover all the teams before the draft, sort of when they should target guys, because I think that's as important as anything, you know. Obviously, you've got the needs, and they're often going to be hit, but when you pick them up, I think is, you know, almost as important.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll go for a bit of that. I'm going to do a bit of research into some guys that are projected to go undrafted. I'm going to try and find me some sort of hidden gem type guys, because I like doing that sort of thing. I'll just finish up. I'll go for a couple of guys who I've kind of just begun about that I intended to mention in terms of stock. So you guys have heard about this Cher McClellan guy. I mentioned him last week. I can't remember who I mocked him to. I think it was New England.
Yeah,
his stock has flown up. He's almost certainly going to be going in the first from the looks of things. He looks a good player. Never going to be physically dominating, but I think he's going to be a good one. His stock has flown up. Pose, as again I mentioned, that seems to have dropped, which is good. I've got that right in my mock, at least it would seem. I still wouldn't be entirely surprised if he went really high, because, you know, that level of physical talent, you never know. Always a chance someone's going to take a flyer on him. Especially a team like Dallas, Philly. I could see either one of those teams picking him up happily. Even Carolina, because they could definitely do with a run plugger. And you'd figure with his size, how can he not end up being a run plugger?
Yeah.
So, we'll see how that goes. And yeah, bad news though, for the first round. I don't think we're going to get to see any of the picks announced before we know who's being picked.
Yeah, how many... How many 26
I think it is. It's either 26 or 28
yeah.
that are going to be there. And it's good. I like them being there, but I don't like them showing them on the phone. No one does. When are the TV networks going to like get this? That the vast majority of the fans hate it. I've never met anyone who goes, no, I like knowing who's going to get picked before the
it's
commissioner
so
announces it.
Never. It's horrible.
I've not found one. And we're talking like the entire internet. No,
we need to start a campaign.
The world of contrarians, the internet, the place where apparently no one can, you know, no one can all agree on the same thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll see if there's a group on Facebook about it. If not, we're gonna have to start one up, because
I want to start like, you know, harassing Rich Eisen on Twitter and be like, you've said it before, now start doing it seriously. We're behind you, man. We believe you have more sway than any of us. You're Rich Eisen. So
he's the man. Yeah.
So yeah, cool. Bit shorter this week, but
not much news.
No, surprise,
yeah,
surprise.
That time of year. So thanks very much for listening, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed this one. As always, same old, same old. Feel free to get in touch. We'll do our best to answer any comments. As I've said this before, we'll be more active. I don't know if it's going to happen, but it should do. Although I suppose people need to be more active before that happens with us. But we'll see. So yeah, thanks very much for listening. We do have an announcement, I suppose, in that what the podcast we're going to do for the draft, we're actually going to record ourselves live as we're watching the draft, because we figure that could be quite interesting. So yeah, get real insight into, you know, what we're all like watching the draft.
Yeah, it might be a little bit X-rated though, because we do get quite rowdy when watching live football related issues. So
well, it depends who the Bucks pick in that first round. If it's Claiborne, then I'll be fine. If it's Richardson, I'll be fine. If it's Khalil, I'll be fine. If it's anyone else, it's going to be X-rated.
You might not get to see the entire draft, because if the Dolphins trade up to go draft Tannehill, I will stick my foot through the television.
It's fine, so I'll have my laptop there as a backup, and you put your foot through my laptop, I put my foot through you. And I mean that. I don't accept that one. Alright, so, yeah, as always, cheers for listening, guys. So, have a good one then. Catch you next week.
Have a good week.
See you later.